How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Our castaway this week is a well-known actor. A very well-known actor. It's Richard Watties. Richard, how could you face to the loneliness on this island?
Well, I couldn't. I would hate it. I dislike loneliness. I think I'm sort of a far lonely person. Rather frightened of people. One has learned to cover that up. But by nature, I think gregarious if I went a sort of psychological nutcase.
How much does music mean in your life?
Oh, a very great deal. I like almost every form of music.
Have you any musical skill?
No, absolutely none.
How did you set about this problem of selecting just 8 records?
Well, first of all, I thought of it as a sort of series of evocations, I think the word is, because I wanted to have music which would remind me of people and of places that I'd been to. But the snag there was that that excluded all classical music, which does not fulfill any of those requirements. And I realized I must have a certain amount of classical music on the island. So I had to, to scrub that plan and start off fresh.
What's the first one you've got there?
Kenny Ball playing Samantha.
Why?
Well, because I think it's enormously cheerful. I like the beat. And I do like the tune very much. I think it's one of the best that Cole Porter ever wrote. And not for nothing did a certain disc jockey choose it.
I love you, Samantha, and my love is never gonna die. Remember, oh, Samantha.
Samantha by Kenny Ball and his jazz men. What's your second choice?
Second choice is the Mozart Piano Concerto No. 20 in D minor.
Why do you choose this?
Well, because I think it's an enormously serene and attractive piece of music, and I do remember my father trying to tell me that one probably had to become a little older fully to appreciate Mozart. And to me, he's gone from sort of being boring pump room to probably really the most marvellous musician of them all.
Which part of the work shall we hear?
Something from the second movement, Mary.
Part of the second movement of Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 20 with Richter as soloist. Richard, what part of England do you come from?
The Black Country.
Do you come from a theatre family?
No, not at all. No connection.
Did you see a lot of theatre as a child?
Yes, quite a lot. I think, really, from a very early age, I was taken to the theatre. Because I remember seeing Chu Chin Chow with Oscar Ashe.
How early do you think you decided you wanted to be an actor?
Oh, very, very early. I was always dressing up and all that sort of thing, and I wrote my first play when I was 6.
Were these aspirations encouraged by your family?
They were not discouraged. They were discouraged only in the sense that they thought that although we were by no means well off, I'd had a rather spoilt and slightly privileged youth. I was a delicate child. And they thought that I wouldn't stand the rough and tumble of the theatre.
What was your first job when you left school?
Well, actually, my first job was wrapping parcels.
What was in the parcels?
Well, the first time there were clothes, and the second time there were very dull electrical equipment.
And what went wrong with this job?
Well, I did. I couldn't stand it, you know. I thought it was absolutely awful.
And next?
Next, I had a sort of psychological fit of the sulks, because I wanted to go into the theatre, and I felt, I suppose, slightly that they might have helped Miss by hook or by crook. So I then said, well, I'll either be a dress designer or I will be a landscape gardener. But neither of those worked, partly because they didn't want me to go to Paris, which was essential or considered essential in those days to become a dress designer, And they paid, or were asked to pay, quite a lot of money to a well-known firm of landscape gardeners in the Midlands to teach me how to dig up potatoes 5 o'clock in the morning for 5 years, and that didn't seem good enough.
So what did you do?
So actually, I was pushed into an accountant's office in a vain hope that I would be made a sort of financial wizard, as I couldn't be an electrical one. No good at all. Absolutely hopeless.
You wanted to get into the theatre?
I did, really, yes.
How did you achieve it eventually?
Well, I achieved it eventually by writing a letter completely out of the blue to Robert Donat, who was visiting Birmingham on his way from Malvern, in a play called The Sleeping Clergyman. He very kindly answered the letter. I went to see him, and he said, "Look, please, with your face, don't go on the stage, because it's going to be awfully difficult to cast you, even if you have any talent."
How did you eventually get on the stage? Did he help you?
He did, indirectly, because... Well, no, very directly, actually, because his wife had heard that at the Croydon Repertory Company they wanted men and they were offering free tuition for a term. And I borrowed £50 from my father and I went.
Mm-hmm. What was your first professional appearance?
I think it was an officer in Marigold.
Where?
At the Theatre Royal Brighton.
How long did you stay at Brighton? This was rep again.
This was weekly rep, yes. We stayed actually for 3 years, but we were very lucky because we used to move around to various towns. We didn't stay in Brighton all the time.
Mm-hmm. And after Brighton?
Well, after Brighton, I felt I wanted to move on a bit, and I joined Donald Wolfert in an ill-fated, as it turned out, tour of Cyrano de Bergerac. Then, after that, I was offered the job of producer by the owner of the Repertory Company, and I took a company up to Huddersfield, and I don't think I was a very good producer. I think I worried the actors and finicked and fussed, and I did also do a season at Norwich, and then the war broke out.
And you disappeared into the army?
For 5.5 years, yes.
But at this break in your career, I think we might stop for another record. What next?
Well, next I would like a song from George Gershwin's OK. And I choose this because it reminds me of something which I never had, probably never really existed, but I imagine that it did, a sort of wonderful gay silliness of the 1920s when a lot of wicked people sat around sipping cocktails and having green powder put on their faces.
I hope you've missed me as I missed you, dear little girl. Lonesome, were you lonesome too, dear little girl, now that I am...
Dear Little Girl from Gershwin's OK, sung by Jack Cassidy. Well, you had 5.5 years in the army, Richard. What happened after that?
Well, after the army, actually, I did have a nervous breakdown. They let me off for the last 6 months of the war and then pushed me out. And I went straight back to the old Repertory Company, but it happened to be at Shanklin in the Isle of Wight. Mm. And I stayed there for about 3 weeks.
Then?
Then I got a job, which I thought was going to be my first West End job, with the late Sidney Howard in Dandy Dick, Pinero's Dandy Dick, but we didn't get to London.
You still hadn't reached the West
still
End?
Still hadn't reached the West End.
When did you eventually?
In a play by William Douglas Hume called Ambassador Extraordinary, which was... William, being rather ducal himself, was a grand civil servant, but nevertheless the type of civil servant that I appeared to be going to play for the next, you know, many years. And I think it was an awfully well-written part, and I think I did it quite well. Mm-hmm. But the play itself was not a success.
But quite soon you were going to be in a West End play that ran for a very long time.
Yes, that was Ring Round the Moon, 1950 to 1955. We ran for 2 years at the Globe.
That was one in which you danced that sensational tango.
Yes, with Marjorie Stewart, and it was great fun to do. And we got, I think, you know, a lot of personal kudos out of it.
What other West End plays?
There was another flop, which I really truthfully can't remember the name of. And then really the next one was a very sort of glamorous production with Vivian Leigh and Laurence Olivier called The Sleeping Prince by Terence Rattigan.
Mm-hmm. And then you disappeared into the film studios for quite a few years.
10, much to my astonishment, I find.
And now you're in a musical.
Yes, I'm in a musical. It's the achievement of it's the dream of a lifetime. I think I'm 20 years too old, but I've done it.
And lucky chap playing opposite Dora Bryan.
Oh, yes, this is marvellous, except that we make each other giggle far too much.
Now, your film career, what was your first film?
Well, my very first film actually was a sort of a super crowd part in The Yank at Oxford, which was before the war. And I thought that would lead to immediate stardom and recognition, and it just didn't.
And your post-war film career
started? My post-war film career started actually after I'd collapsed in every way and had become secretary to William Douglas Hume. And he said, you know, well, look out, chap, you seem to fail hopelessly as an actor. You better try what you like as a secretary. And I was working for him when they couldn't cast a part in The Happiest Days of Your Life, and they gave it to me just like that without a test.
You made rather an impact in that film.
Well, it was a very nice part, a long part, and I got some nice notices on it.
I read somewhere that in the 5 years from 1951 to 55, you appeared in 50 films.
Oh, that's quite possible. I stopped counting about 120. Some of them are very tiny parts, you know.
And usually a man from the ministry.
Yes, usually. Pretty stuffed shirt of some kind or another.
Made a corner in the black coat and striped trousers, but... Any idea how many films altogether?
No, not really. I think it's pretty nearly 200 now.
Which of them do you like to remember?
Well, I love filming. The things that I think have professionally done me the most good were perhaps firstly The Final Test by Terence Rattigan, where I had to talk about cricket and the British, you know, like that. And the other was The Coldit Story, an escape story. Probably the most, again, glamorous one was with Laurence Olivier and Marilyn Monroe in The Prince and the Showgirl. Mm-hmm.
Let's have record number four now.
Well, actually, record number four is a Sicilian record. It's a Sicilian lullaby, and I like it because it brings the sort of hot African wind into my face when I hear it, and it also underlines, I think, the essential sadness and almost tragedy in Sicily. It's sung by Modugno, who's more famous for Ballare, and it's called Ventù d'Estate, which I think is Sicilian as opposed to pure Italian.
Sì, tu sì, tu sì, ne chiudo l'usuri dietro alla montagna. La beggia mia si addormuta su uno scoglio innanti a mare. Lumare zitto zitto mi canta La Nina.
Ventù d'Estate, sung by Modugno. Now, we've talked about your stage and film career. What about radio and television?
I haven't done very much sound radio. I have done an enormous amount of television, I'm very pleased to say.
In particular?
Really, again, I've done an awful number. I suppose the thing that I'm most grateful for, although I left it voluntarily, was the Eric Sykes Hattie Jakes series, which I think made me better known to the British public than anything else.
Would you say, Richard, that until you became known on the weekly television series, you were for years the classic example of the actor whom everybody knew by sight on the screen, always got a friendly reception when you appeared, but hardly anybody knew your name?
Oh, absolutely. And yes, this is completely true.
Well, now television has cleared that up.
Yes, yes.
Well, now you're cosily in your musical, Six of One. What's for the future?
There are one or two film suggestions, but I can't really discuss them.
Have you any particular big ambition of a part you want to play?
Not truthfully. I'm dull as ditchwater about that.
You're just
I want to go on working, but I've got
yes,
no
that's
ambition.
Important. Next record, please.
Well, the next record is Where Have All the Flowers Gone? I do take this terribly seriously because I think it's a marvellous record, and I do wish that all those terribly important people in the world would take a little bit of notice of its message.
Who's singing it?
Marlene Dietrich.
In German?
In German.
Sag mir, wo die Männer sind. Wo sind sie geblieben? Sag mir, wo die Männer sind. Was ist geschehen? Sag mir, wo die Männer sind. Zogen vor der Krieg beginnt. Wann? Wird man je verstehen? Wann wird man je verstehen?
Marlene Dietrich. What's the next one?
Well, the next one, I think, is a very tragic piece of music, piano piece, a prelude in B minor, opus 32, number 10, by Rachmaninoff.
Why do you choose it?
Because it's absolutely tragic.
Part of Rachmaninoff's Prelude in B minor, played by Cor de Groot. Among your many films, Richard, have you played in any desert island stories?
No, none.
Or been on any tropical locations that would have given you some ideas on how to be a good castaway?
No, with all the films, for many years I only achieved Manchester and Hazelmere. Since then I've been to Copenhagen, Paris and Berlin.
Are you a practical chap?
More than one would think, I think.
You could build some kind of shelter?
Yes, I'd get very tired halfway through, but I possibly would knock something up.
Any hobbies that might be useful? Can you cultivate or fish?
No, I can't do any of those. As I say, I enjoy music very much. I like painting very much. I could do that.
Mm. Could you make a craft, or if you found some kind of craft washed up, would you try to escape?
No, far too frightened.
So would I. Let's have record number 7.
Well, I have one I'm not going to play. It's the Sibelius Symphony number 2 in D major, because I would like the first movement, but I think that it doesn't really register unless one plays the whole of it, and I don't think we've got time.
Mm-hmm. So we'll take that as played.
My final one is a song from the film Black Orpheus. I think it's a magnificent film, and this tune reminds me of the end of the film. After Orpheus and Eurydice have been thrown to their death, there's a wonderful scene as the dawn comes up over the Sugarloaf Mountain in Rio, and a little girl starts swaying to a samba, followed by a little boy, and this incredible purity of air and youth and everything. And it made such a vivid impression on me as how life just goes on.
Tristesse, adieu tristesse, un soir de carnaval. Oui, mais le bonheur n'est qu'une lame qui tremble sur le bord de chaque...
Adieu tristesse from the film Black Orpheus, sung by Gérard Lavigny. If you would have only one record of the 8 that you've chosen, which would it be?
Well, it's a terribly difficult question. I think the Mozart.
And one luxury to take with you?
A comfortable bed.
Right. One book apart from the Bible and Shakespeare?
The book that I happen to have reread more than any other, a translation of André Malraux's Life of Disraeli.
Right. And we'll give you the original as well, and that'll be very good.
Oh, no, please don't.
And thank you, Richard Waters, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Goodbye, everyone.